Conclude the lecture with an examination of contention resolution protocols. We'll have a look at a number of results for Aloha and various flavors of Aloha, and then we will examine CSMA-CD protocols, although we won't be deriving the results, we'll just sort of observe how they fit in with the Aloha protocols. The approach to analysis will be similar, but again, they get complicated rapidly. Okay, so as you might expect, the approach to analyzing Aloha protocols has to be significantly different to that of polling networks. You don't have any concept of turn-taking or cycle time to fall back on. So recall that now that the basic protocol is that stations just transmit. If they detect collisions, then they retransmit at a later date. And so what we're going to have to do is to try and analyze the probability of a successful transmission, or the rate of successful transmissions. Okay. And to do this, we are going to examine a time period P, which is the time it takes to transmit a packet. That includes both transmission and propagation times. And so the idea is that this is the period of time that the channel needs to be clear in order for that packet to be successfully transmitted. Or, it, as we'll see, at least that period of time has to be clear for the packet to be successfully transmitted. So we're going to assume something about the distribution of the traffic. Specifically, we assume that the packet arrivals are Poisson with an arrival rate big lambda. And this assumption corresponds to an infinite population of infrequent users. And so we then, based on this Poisson distribution, know what the probability of K arrivals is in any time period of T seconds. And so, in particular, again, we're going to be worried about, we're going to be concerned with the arrival in the periods of, or increments of P seconds, the packet the time it takes to send the packet. The quantity that we want to calculate is S, the average number of successful transmissions per packet transmission time P, and so that has to obviously have a max of 1, although in practice it'll be a lot lower than 1. And in order to consider this, we look at a second factor, G, the number of attempted transmissions per packet transmission time, P. So if that's 1, it's great. If that's more than 1, that's a problem. If it's 0, well, nobody was trying to transmit, but nothing gets sent either. And what we can do is we can calculate our value of S in terms of G. And the analysis is as follows. We, again, want to look at a packet being transmitted and what's the possibility of that packet being interfered with. And we call this the vulnerable period. And there are two possibilities. One is that a packet started transmission before our reference packet, and in this case, if it's less than P, before, then it won't have finished its transmission before we start to transmit our reference packet, and therefore there will be a collision. Similarly, we could start to transmit our reference packet, and before it's finished, a second packet, packet 2 in this case, could start to be transmitted, and again, there would be a collision. So that means that relative to our reference packet, if any other packet is transmitted in our period from minus t minus p to t plus p, that then we're going to experience a collision. So our value S is given by G times the probability that we have a good transmission, and the probability of a good transmission is the probability that there are no arrivals in the vulnerable period. And with where the vulnerable period is of length 2p. Now, since lambda is the arrival rate of packets, we note that G is lambda times P, and so it's the number of arrivals in our packet transmission period P, and therefore lambda is G over P. We substitute in that value for lambda, and we get the probability of zero arrivals in our interval of length 2p is e to the minus 2g. Plugging that in, we get s is g e to the minus 2g. And now we can look, we can map then s relative to g. And what we observe is that we have a period, and with g is less than a half, we'll see why that is in a moment, where increasing the amount of attempts also increases the success rate. Okay, so then, when you've reached this maximum, again at g equals 0.5, you reach a period where increasing the amount of attempts decreases the success. The region beyond g equals 0.5 is said to be unstable because as the success rate decreases, well, the packets back off and are fed back into the system, and that increases g further as more packets need to be transmitted, new packets plus the old unsuccessful packets, and that further decreases s, and so you get into the cycle where again you're unstable and your system is going to go to sort of very low success rates. Okay. To calculate where this maximum value is, all we need to do is take the derivative of s with respect to g, as we do there, and solve for g. And again, if you do that, you see that's where the g equals a half comes from. And then plugging in, that gives you your maximum potential value of maximum potential success rate, which is 0.184. So, not high. And the only way that this is acceptable is on the assumption, again, that you're dealing with light traffic where the packets only need to be generated infrequently and only need to be transmitted infrequently. So we can have a look at the transfer delay, which is essentially a function of, well, the time taken by a successful transmission plus the time taken by unsuccessful transmissions. Okay, and we see that the average number of attempts per successful transition is given by G over S, and therefore equals E to the minus 2G. Therefore, if we have one successful attempt, the average number of unsuccessful attempts is G over S minus 1, or E to the 2G minus 1. Okay. Now, the time taken for an unsuccessful attempt is the packet transfer time or transmission time, which again includes propagation, plus the amount of time it waits in backoff. And for the moment, we're just going to call that B, and we're not going to analyze what B actually is. The value of B is going to be dependent on what backoff strategy you actually use. So, the transfer delay is given by the time it takes to successfully transmit the packet, plus the number of unsuccessful, the average number of unsuccessful attempts times the time taken by each unsuccessful attempt, which again is given by P plus B. And again, at the moment, we can't say much about B. We can only observe that, well, at best it's zero. I mean, obviously it's not going to be zero, but at best it's zero. So if we remove that term, then the minimum transfer delay is given by P times E to the 2G. Slotted aloha is an attempt to improve the efficiency of the aloha protocol and improve the, and so here time is divided into slots of length P, which are equal to the packet transmission time. And we assume that every packet transmitted will fit into one of these slots. Packets have to begin transmission at the beginning of a slot. And if there's a collision, then the backoff time is in terms of a certain number of slots. The benefit of this is that we can decrease our vulnerable period by doing this. Now, as you recall before, a packet could have started transmission before our reference packet or during the same time slot as our reference packet. Now, because it has to start at the beginning of a time slot and be done during the time slot, there's no risk of collision from a packet starting transmission before our packet. It is still possible that multiple packets can be transmitted at the same time, and in that case, you do still have collisions. But what this does is reduce your vulnerable period from 2P to P. And so if we make our same assumptions about Poisson arrival rates and an infinite population of infrequent users, then we can perform the same analysis. But now our probability of a good transmission need only consider an interval of length P, not an interval of length 2P, and we get S is G e to the minus G. And so performing the same sort of analysis as before, what we see is that we've doubled our maximum value of S. Okay, so we've allowed a potential for heavier traffic and more efficiency in the network. We will still reach, at that tipping point, we'll reach an unstable region where when you go beyond there, you reach a cycle where you'll just be increasing traffic and decreasing the throughput. So, again, this analysis has this infinite population assumption, and it doesn't consider the back-off policy used. So what we're going to do in the following is relax or examine what happens if we relax these assumptions and sort of what impact it has on our analysis. So in the first case, we're going to remove the infinite population assumption and consider a finite population. And so we will now consider that we have M independent stations, and the transmission of each station is going to be modeled as a sequence of independent Bernoulli trials. And just to note that the sum of M independent Bernoulli random variables with a parameter G over M approaches a Poisson distribution with a parameter G as M grows large. So if we model our stations in this way, as we get more and more stations, we'll get back to our infinite population assumption. Okay, so we'll now look at this from the point of view of a single station I, and so SI is the probability of a station successfully transmitting a packet in a given slot, and so 1 minus SI is the probability of that you are not successful in transmitting a packet, and GI is the probability for transmitting or not transmitting a packet, regardless of whether it's successful or not. Okay. So, you can see that a station is going to be successful if it chooses to transmit a packet, and none of the other stations choose to transmit packets. And so this gives that station SJ is successful if SJ is equal to GJ times the product of 1 minus GI for all I except J. Okay. Now, if we assume that all of the stations are equivalent, then our overall probability of success S is given by MSJ, and G is given by MGJ, and therefore S is G times 1 minus G over M to the M minus 1. And again, we can observe that in the limit, this will approach our value of G e to the minus G as before. And similarly, given our value for S, we can calculate the maximum throughput by taking the derivative of S with respect to G, And we get that the maximum occurs when g is 1, and that the value of the maximum is 1 minus 1 over m to the m minus 1. And as m approaches infinity, s max will approach 1 over e, again as before. And so we say that for 20 or more stations, then the value that you would get through the finite population analysis is quite close to the infinite population assumption. So the infinite population assumption is often quite reasonable. The next thing we'll do now is take back off into account. And so if we take back off into account, again, we can attempt to say something about transfer delay. So if we can determine how long we spend backing off, we should be able to determine the transfer delay. So we make a number of assumptions. First, that the population of users is infinite. Second, that the new arrivals have the same Poisson distribution as before. Third, that the total arrival process is still Poisson, now with an arrival rate of g. Each station at any time is only trying to transmit one packet, whether that's a previously collided packet or a new packet. The propagation time is tau, so this allows us to calculate the sort of delay. The time it takes to learn whether a transmission was successful or not is, obviously it's 2 tau, it's the round trip time, so it gets there and travels back. But we will express it not in terms of tau, but rather in terms of our packet time p, and we do that by fitting this propagation time into slot time, so we have RP slot times as our round trip time, and the processing time of the receiver is negligible, so we're only going to consider transmission and propagation delays. And so the amount of time taken in transmitting a packet or unsuccessfully transmitting a packet is the time it takes to transmit it, the time it takes for the sender to realize that the transmission was unsuccessful, and then a back-off time, which is given in terms of a multiple of time slots where k is chosen randomly. Okay, so a retransmission then takes place p plus rp plus kp seconds later, and now the average back-off time is given in terms of our average value of k, which is k minus 1 over 2. So on average, it takes k minus 1 over 2 p to back off. Therefore, the back-off cycle takes p, the time to initially transmit the packet, plus rp, the waiting time to realize that there's a collision, times k minus 1 over 2 p. Okay, So the total time it takes to transfer the packet has a number of components. It has the waiting time after arrival to the beginning of the slot when it can be transmitted. And if we assume that the arrivals can come at any time, the average waiting time is half the slot time, or P over 2. The time it takes to transmit the packet, this is P. The propagation delay, and we assume on average the packet will travel one-third the length of the bus, or the sort of total distance that could travel. And so this gives us tau over 3, and again, tau can be expressed in terms of packet slots as well, in terms of P. And then the delay due to retransmission. And this factor, we know a single cycle takes, but we need to know how many times on average it actually needs to retransmit. And so, if we allow H to be the number of retransmission cycles, then the average time required for all the retransmissions is given by H times our single transmission delay. And so this gives us a value for the total average delay. The packet has to be wait for the slot, so that's the second term. Has to be transmitted, that's the first term. Has to propagate a certain distance, that's tau over 3. And then has a retransmission delay equal to the number of retransmissions times the time each of those retransmission cycles takes. Now, calculating H is complicated. So we'll look at part of it, but not all of it. So we can define H in terms of S, G, and K. And to do that, we first need to calculate or define our probabilities of successful transmissions. Qn, or Qnu, is the probability of a successful transmission given that the transmission is not a retransmission, and Qt is the probability of a successful retransmission given that the transmission is a retransmission. So the probability that a packet requires I retransmissions can be defined in terms of Qn and Qt. So that is the probability it is a retransmission times the probability that it's unsuccessful for I minus 1 times, and that on the ith time it actually is successful. And given PI, you can calculate H. H is, and so we get H to be 1 minus Qn over Qt. And we can plug that value of H into our transfer delay formula. Now, it's actually fairly complicated to derive values for Qn and Qt, but they can be expressed in terms of S, G, and K. We can also observe that 1 plus H is G over S. So G over S, again, is the average number of times that a packet has to be transmitted until success. And so H is the average number of unsuccessful transmissions, so add the 1 for the success. And so we can plug in terms of H. We now have two equations, and we can therefore solve these equations to eliminate our values of Qn and Qt. And so you would then get an equation in terms of S, G, and K alone. But this is not, again, this is not easy to do, and typically it has to be done using some sort of numerical technique. And so, again, if we look at the limiting cases where we sort of allow the back-off period to go off to infinity, then we end up back with our initial case, which is sort of not terribly surprising, because if your back-off period, as your back-off period gets later, sort of gets larger and larger, the impact of backing, of sort of retransmitted traffic becomes less relative to new traffic. So we'll just wrap up our Aloha section by observing that, again, the protocol is still in use in some sort of specialized areas. In particular, it's used in radio access control, and typically, one form of radio access control allows the stations to request resources for reservation, the reservation cycle itself tends to be used contention resolution, and so slotted Aloha has been used during the resolution cycles for radio access, slotted Aloha has been used during the reservation cycles for radio access networks. So just wrapping up the results that we have there, we considered two forms of Aloha, sort of the original and slotted. And we saw that the slotted gave better performance. And in general, it's more analytically tractable. And so then for slotted Aloha, we also considered two additional factors. First, we looked at what happened if we factored in finite users. And we were able to, again, calculate S in terms of M now, and observe that now it approached the infinite user case and was and the infinite user case was a reasonable approximation for M greater than 20. We also looked at backoff, which allowed us to calculate a transfer delay. And also, we revised our estimate of S to be dependent on K. And sort of as K increased, our estimate for S, or our value for S, converged to our initial value. Now, far more common than the classic Aloha protocol is the evolution of Aloha as it sort of was applied to wired local area network setups. And so in this, we do essentially the same thing. We allow the sender to transmit, and if there's collision, then the sender waits an appropriate time period for the collision to clear, and then retransmits, or after some random time, then retransmits. Now, the difference between standard aloha and aloha applied to wired scenarios is that in the wired scenario, the propagation times are relatively short compared to the transmission times. So the new version, which was is called Carrier Sense Multiple Access, makes use of this fact to be a little bit smarter about how it transmits its packets. And specifically, it uses the carrier sensing. So when we had Aloha, the station would just transmit, or if it was slotted, wait till the beginning of the slot to transmit. But there was no sense in listening to see if there was anything on the medium as it was because of the propagation times. Now, we require our station to listen to the channel and only transmit if the channel is idle. And as we said before, if the channel's not idle, we have a number of strategies for deciding exactly when to transmit. And then, again, additional improvements can be obtained by using collision detection or collision avoidance. And so we had our carrier sense strategy was the decision of what the station did if the channel was not idle, and there was a non-persistent, you just defer the transmission, persistent, so as soon as it's idle you transmit, or some sort of probability distribution between those two. And so what is chosen is obviously going to have an impact on how the system performs. So we're going to look at a number of results, but we won't derive any more results. Again, the approaches would be similar to what we used for Aloha, but becoming more complicated. And mainly, I want to see how sort of the propagation time and sort of the various flavors affect what we're doing. Okay, so the first case we'll look at is non-persistent CSMA, and we'll look at we'll derive a throughput term for that, and we make a number of assumptions. We assume that the number of users is infinite and the arrival process is Poisson, including both new and previously collided packets. So again, not explicitly taking back off into account. The propagation delay is a fixed value tau. So that's the packet transmission time is fixed at P. And any station has at most one packet to send. And there's no delay based on carrier sensing. And based on this, we can derive S in terms of G, as we did before. And what we see is that we have a factor now, tau over p, so that's the ratio of the propagation time to the transmission time. And so what we can do is examine what impact this ratio has on our value of s relative to g. Okay, and so here we plot it, and what we see is that our values aren't at all good when the ratio is high. Propagation time is long relative or even equal relative to the transmission time. We see we're actually doing slightly worse than our aloha case. But as the propagation time becomes short relative to transmission time, then our efficiency improves greatly. And this makes sense because if the propagation time is short, you are very likely to detect collisions and avoid sort of causing additional, or very likely to detect activity on the network and therefore be able to avoid collisions. Okay. And so just comparing that to our aloha figures again for a small value of A, we see that, and so sort of short propagation times relative to the transmission time, that non-persistent CSMA performs a lot better. And even here, we have to note that eventually we'll reach some point where you still reach a point of instability. We've just cut off the graph before that point. So we can perform the same sort of analysis for one persistent CSMA. And again, we'll see that the values depend on the ratio of the propagation time to the transmission time. And again, they improve the lower our transmission time is. Sorry, I should say the lower the ratio of the propagation to transmission time is. And comparing the one persistent to the non-persistent to aloha and slotted aloha, we see that one persistent performs better than aloha and slotted aloha, and for light traffic will perform better than the non-persistent, but for heavier traffic performs worse than the non-persistent. And so, finally, we can also compare with P-persistent, and so we get a number of the curves there, and more or less a continuum from the P-persistence up to the non-persistence. And exactly which one's best is going to depend on our value of A. So we fix the value of A here, which is small, and we get curves like this. But depending on if we fixed another value, the exact relationship of the curves would change. So just summarizing, as we might have guessed, the CSMA strategies work better in this setup than aloha, and which one works best depends on the load offered and also the ratio of the propagation time to the transmission time. And so we'll conclude by just observing that these protocols are still in use. CSMA-CD was the original Ethernet and still exists as the 802.3 protocol. And variations, CSMA/CA, is used for wireless access, such as 802.11. And so, again, collision, the CD just tries to make the response to collision a bit more efficient. And so CA again tries to avoid collisions. Collision detection doesn't necessarily work because not all stations hear the same things, unlike on a wired wired setup where everybody hears everything that goes on the medium. But it tries to favor sort of important messages using, but despite this, it will try to sense the medium, and once it's sensed, it will wait for a distributed interframe space. And if the medium is busy, then it waits for the interframe space and then picks a random back off time to retransmit. If there are retransmissions by other terminals during this back off time, then while the retransmission is going on, it freezes its counter, so it doesn't start a new back off, but just stops and waits for the transmission to be over. And again, waits for the interframe spacing time again as well. So, an example, we have node A transmitting. Node B and C delay. B then senses the medium and transmits when necessary, when free. C's delay would have been longer, but it freezes its delay counter while B is transmitting, resumes its delay counter when B finishes transmitting, and eventually starts to transmit again. So this gives us cycles where we're waiting and sensing the medium. We have contention then as a number of one or more packets back off, and then eventually the next frame gets transmitted. And again, the stations which are backing off will freeze their timers while the frame is getting transmitted. So that concludes our discussion of protocol analysis or performance analysis for MAC layer protocols. And so we've discussed the basic approaches, and then we have looked at analysis for the two main approaches of sort of turn taking and then contention resolution.